Honey and everybody, welcome back to the Mawa Dissing Show. I am Nicole Bukinage.
And I'm Shirley Nordrum.
So today we have an interview with Ron Turney. He is an employee at the Leech Lake Tribal College, the multimedia specialist.
Yeah.
He's a pretty cool guy, though.
Yeah, he is. He's an excellent photographer.
He's pretty talented.
Yeah, he has a little drone.
Yeah.
He hooks a camera to and flies it around and takes some pretty interesting shots of, you know, orientation when all the new students come and gets them to stand in a, looks like it says LLTC out there. That's pretty cool. He did the golf tournament with his little drone.
Yeah, that was really cool. The aerial photos.
Yep.
Videos.
Videos. Yeah. He's just so good about helping people too. My sister recently did a painting and he did the photography for her. He loved the painting, and, you know, just out of the goodness of his heart, she came in and they photographed it. And he has that skill, you know, just having the right lighting and getting it just right and capturing the full vibrant colors of a painting. That's a pretty talented guy. So, yeah, we're going to visit with him about a program that he's running here at Leech Lake Tribal College. And so here's our interview with Ron. So we're sitting here visiting with Ron Turney today. Ron has this really awesome program that you've been working with here at Leech Lake Tribal College on some traditional arts. So go ahead, Ron. Why don't you give us a story about, you know, how did that come to be and what you're doing. We'll talk about that a little bit.
Okay. About a year and a half ago, Leech Lake Tribal College partnered with American Indian College Fund in a grant to restore and preserve traditional Native arts. This is a 3-year grant, and we're one of 3 institutions participating in this. The grant is to train apprentices with a master artist to do traditional arts. The arts we did choose were birch bark canoe making, hide tanning, quill work, and birch bark baskets used for winnowing wild rice.
So was it hard to choose those arts, or was that just... How did that come to be that you chose those 4 to start with?
We tried to choose on based on importance and the rarity of the art form. The masters that still practice those arts, they're pretty old. They're elders in our communities, and we wanted to get those lessons and those teachings out and preserve those.
Good idea. So who are the other 2 institutions doing a similar project?
One is Cinti Gleska, and another one is... I think Fort Berthold, and the second year the AICF has added an additional 10 TCUs.
Oh, really?
So wow. We're one of the first 3 that started it. It was so successful the first year that they included 10 additional, and I'm guessing they'll add the rest of them the 3rd year.
Really? That's awesome. That's good news. So you're leading the way, and you've had an opportunity to, I guess, participate in each one of these classes that you've been having. I'm going to say that I saw a post on Facebook from you that you said this was the most awesome, like, 3 months of your life or something like that. So I could tell you're really happy about that. And I don't know, do you just want to share what made it the best 3 months of your life?
Sitting with the elders, learning these lessons. It's not all about the art. There's actually life lessons that you're learning. Working with the material, connecting with the material, learning how to harvest. You learn not to take too much, kind of spread the demand around. One of my instructors, Melvin Losh, told us to always be mindful what you're doing here. You're doing something sacred. And that really touched with me.
Yeah. How about the other participants? Did you get relationships with them, or what did you see happening as people, you know how folks are, maybe they didn't know each other coming in on the first day to start something that's sacred together? What's that feel like?
Definitely, it was you see how people grow together and come together with something in common like that. I mean, it's very similar when you meet somebody, you see like they're the person they want you to see, and then that kind of breaks down. Everyone's got a common ground to work with, and then the real person comes out, and then they're learning the same thing you're learning. They're hearing the same lessons, and during some of our interviews, I found out that they learned similar life lessons as well, and it was pretty reassuring that we were doing something very positive.
Yeah, I really felt that. My sister was lucky enough to participate in the quilt working. That's something she's always wanted to do. She's an artist, so you know, I think artists kind of like to dabble in a lot of different things oftentimes, and I have to say, you know, she was very, very happy during that 2-week period of time. She's not a morning person, and she woke up just, you know, talking away on the ride over here to go to quilling, and then just laughing and joking about what you guys had talked about while you spent that time together. So I definitely saw it in the quilling, because I was there when you guys left and when you came back, and I saw how happy you were. I wasn't privileged enough to see the other classes happening, but I'm kind of guessing that maybe happened with all of them. Yeah.
Yep, very much. We kind of develop a bond, all of the artists that were involved in the classes. Every artist that participated has agreed to come back to Leech Lake Tribal College and teach what they've learned. And that was the whole point of this program. So right now, we're going to try to get together maybe this fall, get all the students and master artists together again for have a nice dinner and kind of reconnect and keep things rolling.
So yeah.
What do you suppose that, what was your vision of how that's going to look like when the apprentices come back and they teach? Are they all team teaching, or are they going to be teaching them separately, individually?
We were going to do it in more of a team format. We kind of found out when different areas, like for example, when we were doing the quill work, we found out people were good at gathering materials, some were good at working with the quills, some were good at working with the bark differently, mm-hmm. and they can help. We can help. We had each person had their own strength in the work, and that was the same across the board.
Who was the best at cleaning a gog?
Cleaning the gog was probably Melvin for sure, but I haven't witnessed any other people cleaning, but I've cleaned a few, and it's different. You find the ripe ones, and you find the good ones that are not too smelly.
Yeah.
But you always put your tobacco out, and I bring them home. And I make sure I do it in an honorable way and give thanks to the Creator and to his little spirit, look after him, and thank him for his gifts.
So I was talking to Dewey the other day, and he was talking about how fun the hide tanning was, and he was talking about doing that every year for the classes now. And it's just an all-encompassing educational tool and experience for people, but that's so Ojibwe to do that kind of thing, where you're teaching the students to do this, to be self-sustaining, to be able to provide and be able to go get this done, but also to bring it back to the school and to use it in the classroom. He seemed pretty happy about it. I mean, that was pretty cool to hear him say that, because typically they've been ordering the hides. Definitely. And they're not cheap, you know. They're not cheap, especially when you're shipping them from Canada. And that gentleman that taught that class, from what I understand, is he's no longer doing that to sell them to the college. I thought that was pretty cool. There's such a ripple effect of things that are coming out of this program that it's really cool. It's cool to be able to witness that.
Yeah, and that was one of the main reasons we brought Lester in, was he supplied the college with hides from Canada, and we were lucky enough to get him to come down and teach, since he doesn't sell commercially anymore.
Yep.
He does it for his family, and he's got his sons back home that he left 20 hides for them to do while he was gone down here for 2 weeks. They were busy.
Well, that's the way to go away. Leave your kids with a lot of work to do.
Keep them busy.
Yeah.
Staying out of trouble. Have you had the pleasure of meeting with the other colleges that are doing this same thing to see if, have conversations about, are they having similar impacts of, you know, community coming together and seeing, as Nicole said, the ripple effects of good things coming from this program? Or do you think that you're going to get a chance to do that?
We're going to get a chance this year, possibly at AHEC.
Okay.
American Indian College Fund has asked us of where we're going to present our 2-year report, and we'd like to take our artwork down and Awesome. The canoe down.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm pretty sure, I mean, this is so rooted in our values and our traditions that it affected every community, every school the same way. And we're excited to see what other work they've done.
I just really think that this is an incredible opportunity that we're gifted with, because it's so grounding. And when we're when you can reconnect like that with the land, then you talked about going harvesting, working with those materials like that. I've found that when people are doing things like that, it's just like they calm down. It's like working with wood is like calming or something, you know?
Definitely.
And so many people just... I was doing some carving with folks this year, and some of them were in recovery from drug and alcohol. And they just came out of, you know, needing something to do to replace that thing that they did with something new and helpful. And they said that, you know, as I'm sitting here, this is something I get lost in. And art is like that. You can get lost in it. And it's, art is such a healing thing. Oh, that was what I was going to ask you. Like, how do you think about that? Is art healing for you, or do you think that art can heal a community?
It was very healing to me. It calmed me incredibly. It brought me in connection with my surroundings, my feelings, my spirit, and I believe these teachings and learning how to do this artwork would greatly help the community. I think it's something that our communities have been missing. They're art forms now, but back in the day, these were everyday activities.
Yep.
And it's important. These lessons need to be passed on and taught every day now. That's something I'd like to do in the future, is work on getting an art school together and making this a full-time year-round venture.
I think that would be a great idea. I think it's something that's really needed in our community. I believe in it as a healing tool as well. I'm going to go into an area where I just want your opinion, just trying to start the conversation. I don't always like selling things, but what do you think about our art forms as a means of... We're always up against this economic struggle. You don't always need money, I guess, but it's nice to have it. So how do you think that the art forms, in addition to healing, do you think that they have there's opportunity for people to start cottage industry or things like that that might help, you know, bring in a little income here or there? Or do you think it's going to be more than a little income because it's a rare art form?
There's a delicate balance there. The art form is so rare now. The work is out there. You see work from done in the 1800s, early 1900s, and then you see the work now. People kind of use the artwork now as a means to make ends meet, make money. Beadwork, you see that every day. The art forms we learned over the summer are very valuable. They could be used for monetary reasons, but I think in the long run they're going to be used for educational purposes more so than economic.
Yeah, because I was thinking this is a good segue to what I wanted to say. Was talking with Shirley a couple weeks ago, and then we went up there and visited you guys when Jim and Pat were here, was how artwork, what we know as artwork now, was a tool for and necessity for survival 200 years ago. And so we see that with our birch bark baskets now, whereas it was really cool to see that you guys made the Nushkotchinagan, the winnowing basket. Because most of the times you see birch bark baskets sitting on a desk or on a shelf as a decoration, more or less, and where it used to be, you know, a tool for survival or necessity. It was out of necessity. We had to put syrup in there. We had to put rice in there. And so it changes, but we were asking Pat and Jim up there about how indigenous artists are underpaid for the artwork. And yeah, we do need it. It is the means of survival has changed the past 200 years, where we're selling some of the artwork to put food on the table. So the means of survival has changed, but at the same time, our artists are so underpaid and they're so undermined. It just points me to see that You know, I always, if I'm buying something from somebody, I don't ever try to get a deal from them, because that's time. Time is money nowadays, and definitely, you're putting 40 hours into a birch bark basket. Well, you want to get paid like a 40-hour job then, you know, yes, like an actual job. And so just an observation, I guess, more or less a comment, not a...
And I've seen it also, having the business skills to be able to market a product like this. If you want to turn it into a product, you want to sell it to make money, you need to be able to value that time that it takes, and the artists need to be compensated appropriately. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're not getting undercut on your products and underpaid, because it does take a lot of time gathering materials, prepping your materials, and the work.
Definitely. Do you think that there's going to be, not that we're trying to say that we all want to sell our artwork, not trying to take away from the sacred, but if we are going to do that, do you think that there's opportunities for the colleges that are running these programs to help people, maybe with some marketing strategies or something, like maybe even a collective, like a co-op, like a artists, the Leech Lake Tribal College Artist Co-op or something like that, where maybe they only want to sell one basket a year, you know, they want to gift the other ones or use the other things, but maybe there's that one basket, so there'd be like a this co-op place where, oh, I'm just give my basket here and maybe have opportunity to sell it. You think you see anything like that coming in the future?
Absolutely. I've been asked by the American Indian College Fund what kind of facilities we do have on campus, and that came up as part of a gallery, having gallery space, studio space, and having resident artists come in. We can have our local artists and students actually make things and be able to display them, help them with marketing and building out their storefronts that they want. They're working with a donor right now to help with the facilities on the TCU campuses now.
Really?
Yeah, so I've completed the big survey, and I've attached a lot of photos of what our current capacity is, and hopefully we're on top of the list, and
right,
we can get something going.
It's cool, because when our students are so young, and some of them are so removed from the true identity of being Anishinaabe, that they have to go find out that our people did quill work in a museum down in Minneapolis or even further away. And so that gives them that opportunity to learn who they are right at home here. And that's what tribal colleges were designed to do. That's why they were dreamt about in the first place.
That's very exciting. That's exciting to hear that.
Definitely.
I can't wait for the future. My mom always said, don't rush the future, but that's really exciting stuff that we have these opportunities coming to our communities.
I want your job.
The best job on campus.
No wonder you're so darn happy.
I'm all happy over there.
And you're cool, quite, man, the artist. I mean, the quality of your work is, like, you must have made baskets before. Was it a gift that was just laying dormant in you waiting to come out?
I think it's always been there. Those are the first baskets that I've made. And I put a lot of time and patience and my love and my spirit into them.
That's amazing work for the first time. That's incredible work.
The detail on the quill box here.
They always tell us that we all have a gift, and I think you found yours. It's a really incredible work. So are you an artist in other capacities, other media, other?
Over the years, I've been pretty artistic and haven't really pursued it as much. But now I think it's emerging with my current position here at the Tribal College. It's something I'll definitely pursue now from now on.
I'm happy for that. And I've seen you, and I didn't know you before. I just met you when you started working here, and I watched you, kind of that happiness come out in you. And that's a beautiful thing to see. And it's reflected in your artwork, and it's reflected in your smile and what you're doing. It's just passion.
Definitely, I wake up every day, and I can't wait to get to work and see how I can push this program further and show what can be done.
Well, we're behind you on it in any way that, you know, I'm sure we probably can't help, but if we could, we'd be there to help, and I'm sure a lot of people in the community would be too, because it's a really valuable, precious thing that you're bringing, so miigwech for that.
Just want his job. Thank you for your time, though. I know you're busy.
Have anything you wanted to add to that? Well, last thoughts or anything?
Stay tuned to the Tribal College. We might have additional training sessions next summer. We're applying for additional funding, so we might have some black ash basketry or other art forms. So we're looking over those options right now. Probably next year we'll be offering the courses for credit bearing courses, and so we're working on accreditation and building the curriculums right now. Get those approved by our committees and HLC, and then work towards our 2-year degrees.
Right on.
If it's black ash, I'm down for it.
Yep.
I've done it before, but my baskets are, well, let's just say they're a little lopsided. If there's a master that can help me out.
As Jim Northrup would say, they got personality.
They do. Some are on the left and some are on the right.
Spunky little basket.
All right. Thanks so much, Ron.
Yeah,
so that was an interesting interview. So tell me more about your spunky little baskets there. I have a feeling you made a spunky basket or something. Well, what does that mean?
Every time you bring one in, I think.
My baskets are spunky? Yeah, that was... I'm excited about the opportunities that are coming around for the Triber College and our local artists. That is the thing that we are, as a people, are all seem to have a gift of something that we do well artistically. Whether it's, you know, beading or sewing or cooking or whatever it is, you know. And this opportunity is for more for the visual arts, you know, and the, like, how did he call them? The more at risk. Not many people doing them anymore.
The rare.
Yeah, rare
art forms.
Like quilling and canoe making. I mean, canoe making, you know, who does that anymore? But even if you were a canoe maker, it's getting harder and harder to find birch trees.
Right, materials for it.
And of a size and a quality that, you know, could actually make a canoe out of without having to have patchwork. Patchwork, birch bark canoe.
Right.
Getting hard to do that.
I'd be nervous going into, you know, making something that large scale, especially a canoe, because there's, when we worked on that one with the gym 2 summers ago now, there was so much, like, geometry, and I think, if I remember, he was even talking a little bit about physics when it came to that.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, wow, and I was just like, our people are smart.
Yep. And, you know, we didn't have all the tape measures and all the things that we have now. We used measures of, like, our hand width, our hand length, your arm length. I think maybe tools, like, you know, and canoes fall into that category of tools. I think they were made more to fit your body, you know. I was having a conversation with my friend the other day, and we were just talking about, like, the lacrosse sticks that are being made now. They're kind of all just one size. Like, nobody modifies that one design at all. When, you know, back in the day, why would a big tall guy have a little short stick like that? And why would a, you know, a little short guy, it's probably maybe too long for him, you know? Or we were thinking that, you know, the Ojibwe style lacrosse stick, that round head, that was probably more the size of the man's fist. So maybe even the size of that circular basket was different.
But even the weaving, it's like, there's no one set way to make a dream catcher. And now people are getting even more crazy and unique and cool about them, you know? And they're making it theirs, their personality, their character, and their style. And
that's what's so fascinating about the art, is you can see, you know, you look at something and if you know somebody, like, oh, that's a Jim Northrup basket, you know that, or, you know, well, that's so-and-so's beading, or it's like art styles, you know, painting styles. You can see a style coming out.
You know,
you're going to see a punk Wakanabo, you know how he paints, you know. So after this interview, it was really interesting that White Earth, Leech Lake, and Red Lake had their annual economic development summit, and art was a partial focus of that.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know, because they must be seeing it and thinking it too, that there's a lot of opportunity for our local artists to do their art. So they had it started on a Sunday. That was kind of a rough thing, but it was a workshop for artists to learn how to, you know, market and do that kind of thing to sell their art for those that were interested. And the comical part about it was, I don't know how many people ended up going, but I got a call from my friend, and she said, hey, you know a lot of artists around. Can you, you know, recruit people to come to this workshop? And I'm like, yeah, I can call some artist friends. And so I called a few of them up, and some of them said they were going to look into it. But what I thought was kind of interesting is two of them said they weren't interested in learning how to market their art because they wanted to know who bought their art. And so having a storefront on a website or, you know, sending it off to New Mexico wasn't something that they were comfortable with because they actually wanted to know who purchased their art.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Kind of made me think about when we interviewed Jim and Pat, and they started talking about selling a basket for $400. It was authentically used and authentic Ojibwe Nooshkatchinagan or whatever. And what they sold them as, I don't know, you know, the people who were buying them, but they talked about a non-native group of people bought so many baskets and they turned around and sold them for $800 when they bought them for $400. And it's just like, maybe that's what they're thinking too, you know, commodifying or what is now art but was a necessity, a tool of necessity for survival at one time.
And there are people out there that will go around, you know, they have money and they'll buy art. And then they know that they can, like, double or even triple their money because they travel and they go, like, with the snowbirds to Florida, to Arizona, and those places and where art has a higher value than it does here, and sell it for more.
And they have the audience for it, too. We, you know.
Yeah, and we don't. But the thing is, like, maybe they wouldn't have to be quite so greedy and maybe go into business with the artist and share some of that profit because I don't know about you, but I couldn't, like, turn around and buy somebody's art piece for, you know, $35 and then go someplace else and, you know, sell it for $135. I'd feel kind of guilty. It's not my art, you know. It's not mine to sell, really, you know.
Well, I feel bad even when whether it's something I sewn or beaded, and I feel almost insulted or bad when people try to get a deal. It's just, yeah. Like, especially, I ain't gonna, you know, put any names out there, but family is the worst, you know, and they'll act like you're giving them a bro deal or a family deal, and it's like, you know, the amount of time after the materials and the hours, and I sit there and before I give somebody who places an order a price, I break it down so that they cannot question, well, why are you charging me $150 for this? When really, after materials and time, I'm only getting $40 for my time. Things like that. You truly get what you pay for.
I felt really bad for local artist that I was visiting with recently. She got a order for a medallion. They wanted, you know, I don't know what word that was they wanted on their medallion, but it was a word she wasn't familiar with. I think it was a brand name or something like that. And so she said, can you write it down for me? Because she didn't want to forget. And apparently their handwriting was sloppy or something, and she thought it was a B or something like that, and it was a D. So she spent all this time making a medallion with the wrong word on it.
Wow.
And then, you know, the guy didn't want it, and, you know, how is she going to sell it? Because it doesn't mean anything, you know. So she's just got to basically rip it back apart again and reuse the beads, but when you think of the hours that go into making a fully beaded medallion with a word written in, like, cursive, that's tough, man. That's tough to swallow. And that's basically how she makes her money.
Right.
So she spent, like, a week doing something that you're not going to get paid for.
Yep.
That hurts. You know?
That's crushing.
I just think so much of our local artists, they have such beautiful work, and so many of them rely on that income. That's their primary income.
Yeah, it's like a bit of advice for people trying to get deals. If you're not willing to pay full price, then barter something where they're going to be able to get some use out of it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
20 pounds of rice for something. Or, yeah. You know what I mean? Something that's going to actually mean something and help out instead of trying to get a deal. You know?
Barter is a good thing. I mean, you know, like I think about guys, you know, when they want the medallions and things like that. If they have mechanicking skills, in that case where the medallion was wrong, she's an older woman, you know, maybe it's not easy for her to crawl under the car and change the oil and get it all ready for winter, you know. But that would be a nice thing to barter your skills as a mechanic, or you can share your own skills and stuff like that. So yeah. Truly enjoying seeing what's happening at the Tribal College with the art program, and looking forward to visiting with Whiter soon, because I heard that they have some art incubator stuff going on too. So
I heard that.
Look forward to doing that interview and tune in for that.
Until next time.
All right. That's it.
Miigwech. This program has been funded by the Legacy Art, Culture, and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.